Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to SETI Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Daniel Prue, and joining me here, as always, are my two co-hosts. I've got, what do we got here? We got Derek, Devin, I don't know, what you're kind of all the same. We got Darren, Devin, and Phil. How are you guys doing?
It is Philip. Phil works at the Dilithium gas station. His name is embroidered on his shirt. I'm Philip, and that is completely different. I mean, there's also Philippa, and she is actually, one of the, works over at the big skyscraper in the next planet. She's a big businesswoman, right? And then there's a Felipe, who's also works in another different business building on a different planet. So, but we're not the same, Daniel.
You all look the same, is my point, I guess.
And it's, Darren J. Esquire the third. I mean, you gotta say it right. I mean, you know how much my business cards cost, Daniel? A lot, because that's a lot of characters.
When you were younger, were you in a band called Wild Stallions?
you know, let's just be excellent to each other and move past this.
I get it now. I didn't get it at first, but I got it now. Takes me a second, but I'll get there. All right, guys, how are you? How's everything going good? Anything exciting going on? Darren's building a robot, but it's not a Star Trek robot. So have you considered maybe building an exocomp to go along
actually,
with
that would
your?
Be awesome! I should totally make an exocomp, and then sacrifice it, you know, to make another robot. But
I know you're having I don't know, fun is one of the things on the spectrum, but you're enjoying the life of young children. Why don't you just skip a couple of those stages and just create LOL and just have a young 20 daughter.
I'm worried about the state coming to take her away from us, so yeah.
Not while I'm in command, Darren.
Are you in command, Philip?
It's Daniel this week.
Oh.
Yes, not this week. So calm yourself, Philippa. We'll get there.
But I think making an exocomp out of foam, that would actually be a really fun auction. If I was going to Star Trek Las Vegas, I would totally make one and take it with me. But
you could kind of convert your mouse droid into an exocomp. They're roughly the same size,
that's
right?
That's why I was thinking it was possible. It's very it's not curved, it's very a simple shape. It's kind of that hexagon egg, and then I could have fun, put a little magnet in the front so I could clip different tools in, a giant batleth or
an exocomp batleth. That'd be pretty funny.
That's exactly what we did last time we talked about exocomps.
But then you'd be creating life, and I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
You know, these are just simple tools, Philip. I don't know where you're getting this life thing, but
when you say when you say hexagon egg, that makes me think. I don't know. It just feels like that should be the punchline to a terrible geometry joke. But I don't know.
To explain their shape, Daniel.
It's okay. It's hard.
No kill eye.
Yeah. Exactly. So, guys, I wanted to take one of the criticisms that I hear a lot and also kind of have towards Star Trek.
Don't read the comments, Daniel. That's the first step.
Especially space comments, right? Space tube. So I just wanted to talk about this. This is something that comes up quite a bit, and we're going to go through quite a few examples. But I wanted to talk about, and generally speaking, the first race that comes up when we're talking about this is the Klingons, is this idea of the monoculture, that we meet a species, and a lot of times in Star Trek, of course, these are stand-ins for aspects of humanity, for ill or better, that we kind of have to deal with and face and learn from, and which is good and nice, but it also doesn't make them compelling characters a lot of the time. So, of course, when the Klingons were first introduced, they were literally mustache-twirling villains and, just kind of jerks. And that was about it. Now, of course, over the years, we've developed them significantly more. But a lot of times, unless you're talking about very specific characters, Klingons are kind of the guy, the biker guys who wear leather and just like to beat people up. Space bikers, you know, with the with their shoulder pads and their boots that literally become lethal weapons. Now, of course, like I said, this race has been a part of Star Trek since the beginning, but it is a common criticism, I think, about Klingons. Like, you know, where we get that one episode of Deep Space Nine where we get a Klingon lawyer, and that was a, you know, huge breath of fresh air. But it's
Star Trek VI, Worf's grandfather was a Klingon lawyer, and you know, it's weird because he looks a lot like Worf. So I guess
yes, we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about that. So yeah, so that's a big introduction, basically, to talk about this idea that when Star Trek does that, Star Trek does do this. Do you guys feel like it does? And is it good, bad? Is it okay? And does it ever frustrate you, or how do you feel about it? So, like, again, just for an example here, Klingons. What do you guys think? Like, do you think that we obviously see the warrior cast constantly? You think we're missing out? Are you more interested in maybe what's going on behind the scenes? You know, what would Klingon Hollywood look like? I don't, you know.
Probably more like Bollywood than Hollywood.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think for the large part, yes, Klingons are monocultural or even monolithic or other mono roots. Monorail? No, that's not right. It's not. What's that name? Monorail. But I think there's so many exceptions that you can be like, well, you know, there was the Klingon scientist in TNG, or we get a lot of, and then Enterprise, we got Klingon scientist, and then we sort of get the sort of gambit and continuum of Klingons in TNG and Deep Space Nine, whether it's, I always forget, A Matter of Honor, which is very early TNG, but that's, it shows sort of the softer side of Klingons, like one with daddy issues. and then even on Deep Space Nine, where Worf, we see, you know, through TNG and Deep Space Nine, Worf really isn't really a stereotypical Klingon at all. We see all these other ones who are, you know, who laugh and drink and beat each other up. But given all that, you know, the question is every Klingon a warrior? And if the answer has to be no, I mean, it has to be.
In their hearts, they are.
I mean, right. But there has to be Klingon plumbers. You know, there has to be something else there. Now, I mean, yes, the warrior spirit could be in everything you do, but everyone is not have a batleth or whatever. And then, of course, you see the role of women and all that. So, but yes.
Do you think that Klingon plungers have sharp ends?
Of course they do. Obviously, Dan.
I mean, I don't think you really want to get involved in the Klingon sewage system at all.
Okay, all right. Well, you brought up the plumbers. I didn't. I was just asking the question. Or maybe if they have curved handles, you know, that are sharp and pointy. I don't know.
Like everything they have, like whether it's umbrellas, just have like the curve, like a disruptor.
Well, it's interesting because it makes you think of, like, in the Star Wars universe, there.
Oh, God!
Well, in Star Wars universe, there's like this whole culture of droids which do most of the menial tasks. So it would make more sense in that regard that you'd have a planet where everyone's dedicated to, you know, like either research or science or warrior or fighting. But for the Klingon culture, yeah, I mean, we don't see, like, who builds the ships, who develops the, who are the doctors, who are the poets, you know, and, or does it like, you know, is it like Roman society where everybody's a fighter, but they also have their like B job that they do, but everyone's a conscripted, you know, into the Imperial Army at the same time? I don't know.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, and I don't know whether you're joking or being serious, but there has to be Klingon poets because all these songs do get written by someone. About the Great Deep.
It's true.
Who makes all the memorials, you know? There has to be a Klingon sculptor.
You know, you brought up, I don't want to belabor this point, Darren, but you brought up Star Wars. Star Wars has their own version of this.
Calm down, Phillip. It's okay.
With the mono environments that the planets seem to have. You know, you're
very
either,
much ecological.
Desert planet. Ice planet.
Green planet. Purple planet.
Cloud
and
planet.
Also... Cloud planet, which is
destroyed
great.
Destroyed planet.
Oh,
negative planet.
Phillip.
Where are they going to build the Alderaan Memorial, huh, Philip? Where are they going to build, sing songs about that in our hearts?
It's just a flag that floats in space where it used to be. Oh, that's sad. That's sad. Anyways, yeah, no, and like I said, you know, Star Trek has had 50 years to play with Klingons. They still do have this kind of reputation of all being warriors, but we have seen, you know, we have seen the you know, we dealt with Worf for 7 years. Dealt with Worf, that's terrible. We had Worf as a character.
And he was never, ever seen after Generations.
Not even 7 years, that's right, like 10 years. Yes. Plus the movies, you know. Klingon, obviously, even though she was only half Klingon. Oh, my God.
B'Elanna.
B'Elanna, thank you.
Wow, that's kind of racist.
Klingon lady.
It sounds like I go around calling someone Mr. Vulcan the whole... Oh, God, that happened.
Robot lady. rat mouse.
Light fraction boy.
Anyways, you know, so we do have these character studies, and you know, people like Gorgon, people like Martog, where we do get these interesting Klingons that do. I mean, I guess he's kind of the traditional, but he's got personality and he seems to have. Anyways,
Gowron it is Martok. Yes, okay. You had some interesting pronunciations there. I just wanted to.
I said Martog. I didn't say Gowron. No, I was saying Gorgon from Star Trek VI. Oh. Who I was thinking.
Don't let the dream die.
Yeah, he was more of a thinker, more of a, you know, less of a
Shakespeare reference,
quick to the blade. Yeah, yeah. Anyways, so, you know, Star Trek generally portrays Klingons in this one way, but we do get little glimpses of the other side of the culture. I'm interested, too, now that we're going back to Klingons as a villain in Discovery.
Or shipmates. Who knows?
Well, they have kings, they have shipmates, they have everything, apparently. I don't know.
So do we want to see, so Star Trek The Next Generation had the later Alexander arc where basically he was mocked and ridiculed, rightly so, because he's Alexander, but also just because he didn't want to be a warrior. And do we want to see more Klingons to flesh out the kind of species? Are we at all interested in that, or do we just want to see them shoot at us and at each other, I guess?
I want to see my Klingons fleshed out. I would like to see, just like any characters in Star Trek, I want to see a well-developed character. And not that, you know, I need a parade of Klingons coming through in this 13-episode series where every single episode I get a new type of Klingon so I can understand their entire culture. This isn't a Klingon show, but...
we hope.
That we know of. But, you know, I'm totally fine with there being reoccurring Klingons that... you know, are really well written in the more modern sensibility of how television is made, and just really, you know, not that we need like super specific, you know, plumber Klingons, but you know, if we had a warrior cast and maybe one other, you know, group, or we just, I'm fine with them building that world more. I mean, everyone loves the Klingons, at least in some regard.
Now I just want to play Star Trek Online as a Klingon, and then when it asks you at the beginning, you know, do you want to be the tactician or the engineer? I want the plumber option. And
so, you know, and to bring it back to Philip's favorite subject, back in the day when I used to play Star Wars Galaxies, where you could be given any role, and there were a lot of non-combat roles. I remember people would be essentially what were bards, the entertainers that would sing and dance at the cantinas and stuff like that. Well, you know, we already mentioned they like to sing, and they like to sing of their tales of conquest and all this stuff. So anyways, I'm thinking now in Star Trek Online they should do the same thing. You literally could select Klingon plumber. That would be pretty awesome. So look for that in the future, because if it's not there, I don't know why you'd even play that game.
Well, it's interesting because if Klingons are on, and this is probably me not thinking very creatively, if there's Klingons on a starship or whatever they call them, warbirds or whatever. Presumably they're warriors. You know, it's not like there's going to be a plumber. We can really think of another example. You know what I'm saying? So how much of a continuum can it be? Now, I mean, theoretically you could, because there's a doctor, there's an engineer, there's everything else you would have on a starship. But presumably there's going to be the Klingon shooting weapons, or the one in the center seat who's a captain who wants to shoot weapons. So I think that'll be difficult if it's a ship-based Klingons, because, you know, you can always make, even if they're villains, which presumably they have to be, given the continuum, though, I guess make no assumptions. For some reason, the first thing that came to mind was Battlestar Galactica, where the Cylons, the human-looking ones, the models, I guess you would call them, like, those were very interesting as villains, because they were clearly bad, but they weren't just bad to be bad. They had their own belief systems, and they had their own unique characteristics in each model, blah, blah, blah. But, like, that would be interesting just instead of, because the Klingon villains we've seen so far are very, you know, power, glory, blah, blah, you know, and that's not that interesting other than just to be troublemakers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they do with them. I'm hoping, you know, you take a little bit of their bite away when you kind of humanize them. That's the case with any villain, wow. Usually, you know.
You're just wanting us to bring up the Borg, aren't you?
We will get there.
If there's any model, but actually, culture.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, saying there's a monolith culture is generally put at is a criticism, but with the Borg, it's a little differently. But again, we will get there. We're not there yet. You're jumping here.
I think, you know, the fact that they build those black objects at 1x3x9, it's really. Oh wait, we're not talking about monoliths. Sorry. That's 2001: A Space Odyssey. But yeah, no, I think it, so. When you proposed this topic, Daniel, I honestly didn't know what this word meant, so I had to look it up, and it said, you know, monolithic culture was a culture that kind of insulated itself from outside, and you know, basically, it's like everyone talks the same, acts the same, like it's not very deep. And I was trying to think of other species besides, you know, like the Klingons, we get a lot of that. But it kind of made me think of, is it Angel One? Where they're all kind of very,
Women?
Yeah, the women planet.
Which we,
well, there are men.
We don't mean to call it that, listeners, but like, you know what we mean.
But it was that it was interesting because they were trying to present. You know, it's this, oh, look, the women are in power. Like, oh, how can everything work? It's like, well, yeah, of course it can. That's not the point of the episode. But in that episode, it was interesting how, you know, they didn't, in a monolithic way, they didn't want the men, quote unquote, or the survivors of the crash to be in their society because they didn't want outside sources affecting it. And that's really what monolithic culture means is we're closing our borders. We don't want to accept people that are going to alter how we feel the status quo is. And in that regard, you know, there in the fact that in Star Trek there's so many cultures, and you know, the Ferengi and the you know, the Bajorans, like everyone, because I think in Star Trek as a whole, you know, characters represent different facets of humanity because we're the best. I'm a little biased, but it's interesting how that
human,
kind of just...
If you could only hear yourself.
Even the word itself is offensive. I'm sorry, Philip.
Well, you know, that is exactly where we were going next with this. I think the second biggest example of this would be the Ferengi to me. Kind of their... You know, they're all so fixated on this one thing. They're all so...
Umaks.
Public Umaks, too, which is kind of gross and weird. Right. But, like, it's like, dude, you're at work. I mean, obviously, he doesn't have a problem with that. But you're behind the bar in front of everybody. Anyways, they're the biggest example I can think of, besides the Klingons, where this is, you know... And they try their best to kind of give the Ferengi a little bit of depth, but it's never really that much. It's just everybody wants money all the time, and that's it. You know, there's nothing else to the Ferengi, and which is better than what we got in the beginning when it was just monkey noises and laser whips, but it still feels a little... It's so easy, you know what I mean? It's so easy to do that. There are other races that we'll talk about later on that don't suffer from this.
I feel like if there was a chapter of a Star Trek book that had that as the heading, I would want to read it, and then I would be disappointed. Monkey noises and laser whips. I'm oh, It's a first season Ferengi.
Yeah, at first you'd be kind of interested, like, oh, what's this about? And then no.
Well, you know, it's interesting what Darren mentioned, that, you know, presumably we're talking more about the cultures being represented, unfortunately, as monolithic, but then Darren's, that cultures that in and of themselves are, another phrasing, xenophobic to a certain extent. Because that's what we get a lot of that in Star Trek. Oh, this race we've encountered is xenophobic, and they don't, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Like Masterpiece Society.
Right. Well, yeah, like every other one, you know, really, especially in TNG. But I think it's curious that a lot of the characters that the writers will tend to go to are of mixed parentage. And so, since we're talking about the Ferengi, I don't think we ever saw a and I don't know if mixed is an appropriate word or not, but I don't know the right word to use. So, but we ever saw a mixed Ferengi, a Ferengi of mixed parentage. Right. And so I think what we'll often find fascinating is after we've established monolithic culture, all Ferengi are like this, then we'll be like, but here's Rom. He's not like that. He's interesting. Or here's Nog. He's not all bad. He's interesting. You know, and that, so therefore the counterexample makes that interesting. But of course, they're unusual. That's what makes them interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Nog is a good example. Obviously, they do a little pushback with Nog. He is in everything but actuality, like actual biology. He seems like he's more of a child of the multiculturalism that's on Deep Space Nine, you know? And he even though his parents aren't alien, he certainly grows up with alien and an alien lifestyle with alien values, and that's kind of a point of contention early on in Deep Space Nine, and then you kind of have that same, essentially that same path for that character, and he is a good example. The problem is everybody else is exactly that one way, you know.
You know, I think the thing about the Ferengi, and I'm value neutral, they're not my favorite, but I'm not going to here to condemn them for just being a horrible thing, because they're, when I see a Deep Space Nine Ferengi episode, I get ready to roll my eyes. But I'll say a third of the time, it's like, oh, no, this actually turned out to be really good. No, that means two-thirds of the time it's not. But nevertheless, I'll take the third quality. You know, that's not a terrible batting average. Because 300 is actually a very good batting average. But anyway, see, I know sports. But
sports ball? Come on, Philip.
I know.
We can't talk Star Wars, but we can talk about baseball. I mean, I guess it's appropriate for this conversation. Yeah, so.
The Astros, I mean, that's a team. Right. Still,
it's also a dog, I think. Right.
Only more than one of them. But
water polo. We can talk about water polo till the cows come. Oh, right. Yeah.
But I think with the Ferengi, the thing is that they're mostly comic relief, and so I think the challenge is find me either a regular Ferengi character that we know being serious, which happens sometimes, or a serious Ferengi character who's not treated as solely comic relief. Someone who can take seriously. And I think, you know, that's Nog, I think, for often. You know, I don't think, sometimes, but rarely, is Nog used for comic relief. There are times, but rarely. He's a serious character. And so I think that's more interesting for a Ferengi character. Don't just him, the one, prophet, and jumping over himself and making loud noises when he's scared. And, you know, show me a serious Ferengi. Even one that would be prophet, you know, like of regular Ferengi values, but who's maybe more devious and serious. But
the only person I can think of is Moogie, who obviously.
But then, yeah, she's such a.
But even
a comic actress, you know, so she's.
Yeah, and but even her motivation is still profit based. She's also socially motivated as well. But it's basically just to level the playing field, though, so she can also make. Which she's, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing that they try to do there. I feel like it falls flat more than it succeeds. But on the whole, like the planet and everything about it is so focused on money. You know, I get it. It's why they're doing it. It's a reflection of, you know, some Western values. But it's hard to take it completely seriously when, like you mentioned, Philip, it's wrapped in silliness most of the time.
Right. It would be like saying, like, oh, humans only care about science or something, you know? Well, no, I mean.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because we actually have, you know, multiculturalism. So it's you, even in Star Trek, the way that we are represented, I guess you could say something like science, but even that doesn't seem fair. It seems like we're varied, you know, we all are all interesting and have our own motivations and, you know,
and here's,
have our backstories and stuff.
And I know this is dangerous territory, but I'm going to dip my toe in it. You know, I'm not a scientist or a biologist or anthropologist or, like, I don't know. You know, of course, these are aliens, so it's made up. We don't know how aliens would actually evolve. And so we only have human beings to pick on. Human beings have what I'll call is color differences. And yet, Klingons tend to be the same color spectrum. Shades of brown.
Vulcans have a little bit of variety.
Well, I was, you know, I haven't gotten there yet.
Not until yeah. Voyager.
But anyway, yeah. So like Ferengi, they're pretty much the same brown spec. You know what I'm saying? Is that unusual? And I don't know. I don't, you know, because conceivably, if a planet has, and I don't know. I don't know how colors come from. I assume it has to do with climate and weather, but I don't know. But presumably, you don't have a monolithic climate. I assume that's probably one reason.
Well, if Ferenginar is a whole, just everything's just swampy all the time, I get, and they make sense. They all look like copper frogs or whatever.
and you know, again, having I'm so liberal science or social science, but like I don't even know if that is real. Like, could a planet just have one climate? If I'm using that word correctly.
Well, I mean, it depends. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm fairly certain other than... Yeah, depending on the climate, I don't know. It seems kind of outlandish that it would be entirely the same all the way
right.
around the planet.
Like the whole of Ferengi is just Seattle, is what I am led to understand.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that seems very unlikely to me. You know, there would have to be some temperature differences between, depending on how it's facing the star... Whatever, we're not scientists here, but either way, there is actually one example I can think of, Philip, of what you're talking about, and that's the difference between the regular blue guys, who I can't think of, Andorians, and the Enar. Right?
Oh yeah, that is very interesting because, of course, we don't really get a lot of Andorians. I'm not saying anything new that people know Star Trek. We don't get a lot of Andorians. I think that's one of those teased species where maybe people always wanted more, but we only got like two or maybe three. I think there were two showings maybe, and one was a fake Andorian in TOS, and then maybe some like backgrounds in the movie. So then we got this weird-looking one in TNG, and then nothing at all until Enterprise, and then we went crazy. But then, yeah, I thought that, again, here's a species of Andorians or subspecies. I don't know what the technical term would be, but anyway, but yeah, they live in the really, really cold. They're white, we're blue. Da-da-da.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ferengi? Darren?
Yeah, I mean,
do you buy our discussion?
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I really want to get into the Divine Treasury, guys. Like, you don't even know, but I can't make those payments. The Ferengi, I feel, they kind of get a good treatment, kind of like Klingons, where they get a lot of, technically, the times we see the Ferengi society, it's going through sweeping change. So, they're, like, from the rules of acquisition shifting to the power situation to, I mean, they're kind of entering this whole new era. But, you know, actually, I wouldn't, you know, I know this isn't the Discovery show, but I wouldn't mind seeing Ferengi in Discovery times, like... pre, you know, TOS era Ferengi, like, just I think I'll just go back to my...
Do you not remember the first episode of them in
Enterprise?
TNG?
Okay, but I'm saying before that, maybe they like slumped, like it was okay, and then they went to furs and whips and then back to like an industrialized society.
I just mean we're not supposed to have run into them at that point.
Yeah, I think Enterprise taught us that we don't care about that.
Well, that's different.
Like, about everything? No, I'm kidding.
You know, that's actually not as egregious of a timeline infraction that people make it out to be.
It's not.
You know, all the crew's incapacitated. They couldn't make scans for whatever reason. And then there were just these people they ran into. They ran into new people all the time. And then, I don't know. It's not that big of a deal to me. It's whatever. It's fine. Anyways, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Darren.
But I think... You know, I'm hoping, again, I know we're not talking about Discovery. Gosh, I keep coming back to it. But, like, yeah, I hope we get some more races, like some new races. Like, there should be a whole new race that we get that starts to become extremely developed. Because think of,
the denobulins of Discovery.
Yeah, exactly. That would be awesome. Do you have one character that's well written that becomes a fan favorite and really establishes a new species?
Harry Mudd?
No, not Harry Mudd. Gosh, Daniel. Jeez. Just no.
So,
do you run with scissors as a recording, too, Daniel? I mean, gosh.
As of recording, we just found out pretty recently, a few days ago, maybe about a week ago, Harry Mudd is set to appear in Discovery
by Schrute,
played by Dwight Schrute, Rainn Wilson. So that's going to be interesting, and that's all I'm going to say because there seems to be a lot of contention about it. But maybe at some point we'll just talk about Harry Mudd. We'll have an episode about Harry Mudd.
Talking about the Ferengi, and Darren, you mentioned we see the Ferengi going through social change, especially the role of women, but the role of everything else, I suppose. And of course, that makes them interesting. And you could argue even Klingons. We see the Klingon Civil War. We see, Martok rising up in power against Gowron. And the TNG Klingons are more, kind of not a defeated, but they're sort of in their old empire days of remembering past glories. And then we sort of see in later TNG and then DS9 more like, hey, let's go back to more fighting and killing each other. And so that's interesting, right? Whatever, social development. But then let's go to humans. Like, what social development do we ever see in the human? You know what I mean? It's not like we see any social change going on because we're good, right? There's nothing to do here.
Well, we make everything better. Right, yeah, exactly.
So yeah. Every other race is interesting when they're not being themselves except us.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's the whole conceit of the show, though, right? Is that we've learned from our mistakes, and not that we've achieved perfection in any way, but we are certainly headed in the right direction and are at least cognizant enough to learn as we go, I guess. But this conversation was already mentioned once, and we're going to bring it up here. This is actually going to be in a slightly different context, but we're going to talk about the Borg. We're talking about the Ferengi and Klingons and some other examples of this monoculture and why it can be a negative thing. But here it's not, because it's the whole point. This is a society which completely destroys individuality, and that's what makes them scary. That's what makes them interesting. And they only have one culture because they're all one thing. They're just one giant collective, and it's what makes them the Borg. So it's a little bit of a different situation. It's not like we would expect. It's not like we would expect sects of the Borg to go off and do their own thing. But even though they end up doing that sometimes, which is really frustrating, see Lore's Borgs. As well as anything from later Voyager.
Look, they are not affiliated with him. Show up. Okay, they have their own swag. I know what you mean.
Well, no, though on the color spectrum issue, you do have your like super white Borg, and then you have your more every species color Borg. So I think, are those the same ones? Or I don't know.
You've got your first contact slightly clammy Borg.
That sweat a lot, or they're just very moisturized or something.
Yeah.
I think to me that's the ultimate threat of the Borg, and maybe I'm just restating what you said, Dan, but that's the whole thing, that you lose everything to become one. And we talked about perfection. There is a species claiming to want perfection by adding everyone's biological and distinctiveness to their own. And I think, I don't know. To me, I'll just use me. I won't make it everyone. That to me is a terrible villain and threat, and like to lose your individuality. I mean, in theory, right? It sounds good. Collectivism can sound good when we all work together and everyone's using their own gifts to help a common cause. But then when it's like, but then you erase your individuality and you just become a subset of the greater cause. That's causes all of us to be like, no, thank you. I like my individuality very much, thank you. And I think that really can be, at least maybe philosophically, a very dangerous villain and threat.
Yeah, it's interesting with the Borg because, again, they started off, Q even said, like, they're not interested in your technology, they're not interested in, or they're not interested in you, they're interested in your technology. And then it kind of does a 180 to, they're all only interested in you because you become their technology.
Yeah, that's true. It was just their identity crisis that when they were first creating the Borg, and later on, obviously, they had to change it up a little bit. But it's just in this context, in this conversation, the Borg are a really interesting case study because, like I said, it's done on purpose and it's done as a threat. Like, you don't want to be this way. You want to everybody to have their own motivations and their own reasons and their own ways of doing things. This is otherwise, like you mentioned, Philip, on the one hand, yeah, working together is great, but you can't lose what makes each. It's all about diversity, essentially. That's kind of the story of the Borg, I guess.
And what is, and this is going to be a dumb question because I can know the answer just because it looks cooler, but, because I'm looking at my Borg figures across the way here. Like, I have a Klingon one, I have a Hirogen one, and then I have sort of the smaller models. It's like a Hugh and then like a regular just generic, TNG looking one. But, I know the First Contact / Voyager Borg look cooler. I mean, there's no denying that. But what do you think is scarier? That you would be assimilated and then just look like yourself, but just assimilated? Or that you would be, become the TNG where you just look monolithic, covered in white powder makeup, and then all look the same?
I don't know which I want my eye patch on. And that's the real question.
Right.
Well, eventually they're making their way towards Cyclops, just straight across beam kind of thing. Eventually
it's called Geordi.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's true.
I think they become Cylons at that point, don't they?
Yep, and it just goes...
But yeah, I mean, I think that is just the scariest part, I think.
So, generally speaking, not a great idea. Let's give races and characters... some depth. Let's give them some width. So here I'm just going to kind of open it up for any examples you can think of. One that popped into my head when you were talking a little bit earlier, Darren, and I hesitate to say it, so I'll phrase it slightly differently.
You can sing it, Daniel. That makes it easier.
I will say that Bajor seems to have a very mono-religious society, which... True. Is interesting in a way, I suppose. We get enough Bajoran characters with their own kind of thing going on that I hesitate to say the whole society is, but it seems to be that there are like two sects of their religion. It's like either you are mainstream, whatever it is, Bajoran Knight, or I don't even know what their religion is.
Or Reformed Orthodox Bajoran. No.
Whatever it is, or you're extreme terrorist crazy person. There doesn't seem to be any sort of room. There are different spiritual beliefs that are kind of put forth, but it just seems to be very, very generally rigid. Every single Bajoran you're going to meet is going to wear the earring and blah, 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 blah. Because essentially their culture and their religion is so tightly integrated.
Yeah.
And that's just what popped into my head. I'm not even really criticizing it for that much. I'm just trying to give an example. Do you guys have anything else, or do you have anything on that you want to contribute?
Well, I think, I don't know, I guess that's the challenge, but then, I don't know. You would say, in order to make these Bajorans recognizable as Bajorans, and for us to explain their culture, we have to explain, okay, they're very theologically based, or at least cultural theologically based, two different things, I suppose. Species, and this is why, blah, blah. So then, there's a Bajoran, because I know, because there's a thing. But of course... That's an easy cop-out. You can make a species crazy diverse. You could even say that there's more than one that maybe as a species, and because I don't know how, because I don't care, not because I don't care about the characters, but it's just not something I pay attention to. I don't know how big Bajor is, so I don't know what kind of its population we're talking about. Obviously, slightly less after the occupation. But I don't know how big of a people we're talking about. So, is it Earth, where it's billions of people, and... then really there's no excuse.
That's a good question. I'm not really sure if that's ever stated. I mean, it may very well
and
be
also
stated. And
I know they do have different planets. There's Bajor, there's a bunch of planets in the Bajor system, and there's colonies or whatever, settlements or whatever. But in other words, would it have been interesting to say that it's a religious planet, but not necessarily the same religion? That, just as on Earth, we have, lots of religions. That's an actual number. But, you know, maybe that they're all, that's just the thing.
Don't they
that
list
comes
them
up.
All in Babylon 5? Just go back to that episode.
Exactly. Exactly. But, like, you could have, oh, there's the prophets, and there's these, and there's that, and there's, the, you know, and then, like, you would recognize they would maybe have different symbols and different, some have earrings, some have this, some have that. So maybe you can recognize
it's,
the Bajoran,
it's like,
but.
It's like, so the, there's a church, a Bajoran church on the station. Like, imagine if there was...
the Earth Church.
The Earth Church on, like, the International Space Station. Like, oh my goodness, the fighting, like, the ridiculousness that would come out of, like, what church would be represented. Like, you could never even represent, you know, any significant amount of people with that. That's way too specific, you know?
Right.
So, anyway.
Well, no, like, even, and even if you want to, and I know this is a larger... longer discussion on the specific topic, but even if it's a prophet temple, I don't know if that's the actual what you call the religion, but if like that's the prophet temple of Bajor, okay, so you know it's not the whole planet, but it's the prophet religion, or okay, yeah, like there'd be like a Christian church, what does that mean? Okay, like there's a million, you know, denominations,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like so like just anyone can come, like, well, they go in there like, that's not how we do it, we prefer to be this way, or we have our, you know, whatever, you know, so that to me doesn't make sense either, or at least it would have been interesting, and we got a little bit, like just a little bit, but not a lot of like the denominations of, you know, whatever. So like, you know, we're just that there's one Vedic, or not that one Vedic, excuse me, there's one Kai and a bunch of Vedics, but like it's like that's the Catholic Church or whatever example you want to use, but I'll use that for now, you know, as a Christian example. So like that's the Catholic Church, but then, you know, there's different kinds of Catholics, but even then there's a lot more Christianity examples, and so just to have this is the one religion of Bajor, there's no others, no one has any other ideas of how to do this religion, there's one way, and like that doesn't sound very,
yeah. And also I want to just state that I understand why they do it the way they do it. You could certainly bog down the show by trying to show all these different things, especially if they don't really matter in the overall story, but on the other hand, it's shown as such a significant part of that culture. It's so monumentally monolithic, you know, to use that phrase again, that it begs the question, why isn't there anything else? That was my only thought about it. But
well, it's and I don't know if it's interesting, but what comes to mind is I almost had the episode name, but it's Deep Space Nine, so that threw away. But anyway, when the competitor emissary,
the emissary,
when the competitor emissary comes through the wormhole,
oh yeah,
and so because he's not, I guess he is religious based. I was about to say that, but he's more about castes, at least
about
the prophets,
like the old ways,
social structure.
So yeah.
Which isn't necessarily. I mean, he's prophet because he's like, oh, I'm the emissary of the prophets, but it's not in the same way, I guess.
Yeah, it's also interesting, too, and this is why, like, conflating the religion and the politics is sloppy, because, like, he comes in, everybody accepts him immediately as soon as they decide that's what they're going to do, and everybody just follows suit. Like, everybody. The whole planet. Even though they all think it's a dumb idea. Like, everybody's like, this caste thing is really stupid. I don't know how to draw pictures, but I'm going to keep doing it. Like, it's so dumb. And then afterwards, they're like, man, I'm sure glad we didn't have to do that. Like, it's like nobody can think anything outside of the box.
I'm glad our emissary's a wuss and doesn't make us do stuff.
Yeah. But anyways, I didn't want to get too far off onto that topic. That's a whole – we could talk a whole show about that, certainly. Any other examples you guys can think of?
Well, unless Darren has one. I was going to say we mentioned it, Vulcans. And I think this is worst example, or the best example, depending upon your point of view, because they are all the same. I mean, I think the challenge is, can you make Vulcans interesting? Because I think the answer is no. And now, I think people like T'Pol more than me. So if you like T'Pol, then you're saying, well, yes, Philip, you can make Vulcans interesting. I like T'Pol. She's awesome. And I'm like, yeah, okay, if you think so. And Tuvok is an interesting character. Well... You know, he's a good character. I don't know if he's that interesting. You know what I'm saying? He has his episodes, right? I'm with him, and I like to watch him. But, gosh, Vulcans are boring. And is it just because they're logical and boom, you're done? What more can you do with that? And maybe the answer is nothing. Because, you know, Enterprise sort of had its pre-reform Vulcans, and they were interesting in that they were horrible. And I don't mean that as I didn't like them, though that too, I suppose. But more like they were a little more diverse, right? They were sort of a little more rougher around the edges than what we were used to seeing in the 24th century. But I think that I hope in Discovery, if we're going to bring that up, that when we do see Vulcans, somehow the Discovery writers do find a way to take what we know of Vulcans and make them... Well, we're going to see Sarek. Obviously, he's our character.
Right.
So, now, of course, he's a character we already know, so he can't be that much different. I suppose he could be. Whatever. Nothing sacred.
I mean, it's like 3 years before we meet him, so he can't be too terribly different.
Right. But. He's like, oh, that son of mine.
You know, I have this same issue, too, Philip, sometimes. Like, I like Vulcans, but yeah, not super compelling. And for the same reason that we're talking about here, you know, if you get to a point where everybody's super logical, then you deal with the outliers, like, what's his face?
Cybok?
Cybok, I guess. If he's even...
real.
Whatever you want to consider. He may be a marshmallow-induced... Anyways. But really, I think how you make Vulcans interesting is you force them to interact with people who challenge the way that they think, which is what, you know, why Spock was so interesting a lot of the time. What you don't want to do is make a whole series based on a Vulcan ship. I think that's where you're going to start to run into some serious problems, or spend too much time on Vulcan, because it's probably really boring. You know, it's everything is at least resolved amicably.
It's a desert planet. Let's be clear.
It is kind of a deserty planet, yeah, certain.
It's a more sculptured Tatooine.
Well, it depends on what universe you're in. If you're in the JJ-verse, it's more of an Alderaan-y planet, if you know what I mean.
No, we don't. We never got there. I mean, we were on our way, and then...
exploded.
And then it exploded.
Actually, it didn't really explode. It collapsed in on itself, yeah. I'm with you, Philip, on the Vulcans, because it's a very good example of this, and I don't know how you get around it with Vulcans, because it's a tough thing.
I think it's interesting, and I go, this is going in deep, go with me, folks, that Vulcans aren't monolithic. In other words, you know, what Darren was talking about earlier, they make contact with humans. Why? You know, why do they do that? Just, I guess, greater knowledge, perhaps, but, like, why do they care about other species? Because to me, I could see Vulcans as being xenophobic. Maybe that's not logical. But that, you know, why that we know what we're doing, you know, we can do it on our own, almost Borgish, I suppose. But they almost seem like they would not be the kind that would want to interact with a lot of people. But they do. And so that's interesting. I guess that makes them interesting.
I don't see them as xenophobic. I just see them as arrogant. Yeah, they just like they see the value in interacting with other cultures for a lot of different reasons, but they just don't change that much because they don't think they should. You know, they are already kind of where they want to be. And
I've been thinking that, you know, we've been talking a lot about you have monoliths and monoculture, and I think it still kind of comes back to that point I said where. In Star Trek, often the cultures are monolithic on purpose because they're supposed to represent either a portion of humanity or a portion of our history. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, do you you kind of need that? Can you not go away from that because of Star Trek? Like, to have it be Star Trek, do you need it to be a commentary?
Yeah, to me, and I don't know. Because, not to push Daniel out of this conversation, but Darren, you well know with Babylon 5 that...
Oh, I know.
I would say that one of the great things...
We're going to close the show down here, and it's been nice.
But the great things about those aliens is that, I would argue, those are not monolithic alien types. Like, you see the different Minbari cast. You see, the Centauri and Narn, maybe. But I mean, there is a diversity in those aliens. And so I guess if what you're saying is that in Star Trek, the aliens have to represent some sort of stereotype or some sort of cultural thing, I guess I don't always take it that way. I mean, I get the obviousness. Okay, Daniel's now back in. That Ferengi is capitalism gone amok. And, you know, Klingons are the evil Sylviates, but now they're just, I don't know, just aggression in general, I guess. I don't know. Romulans are supposed to be, I guess, more Asiatic, you know, origins. And now they're just cunning and sneaky in the outside of that species racist stereotypical way. But anyway, on their own. And so, you know, but I don't, I guess I don't need that in a Star Trek. Maybe, I guess I can see where those things began, but I don't need that anymore. I just need a good alien species.
Well, and you can still tell those stories with those races and still have them be multifaceted. You know, it, if Quark is obsessed with money and his society is just has a very heavy bent on greed, but isn't so crazy about it, like literally literally worships it and thinks that they're going to go to a bank when they die. You know, it's like, it's so over the top. It's just kind of too much. That's my point. But you could still have that character exist the way he does, still make money the most important thing to him and even to his society if you want. Just don't make it the only important thing to his society. That I get, you know. And the last thing I was gonna ask you guys, which is a kind of a good way to bring it up, is which races in Star Trek do you feel does not suffer from this? Where is a good example of a pretty well-balanced, well-rounded race in Star Trek? And it doesn't have to be super crazy heavy, you know, but we've mentioned a good portion of the major races here. So I'm curious if you guys think there's anybody that's, you know, in your mind, you're like, oh, no, we get to see, you know, this part of them and this part of them. And
I think Morn really...
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't even know what species he is. I mean, and I'm going to go there. I think humans are pretty monolithic in Star Trek. Very Western, if not outright American. Predominantly white. But very Western and North American, predominantly. And it's a very monolithic culture like that. And not all, you know, you get a little bit of variety, but not much. And so I think with Discovery, it'll be interesting to see how humans are portrayed in the 21st century. Assuming he keeps his accent, we do have a British captain. But it'll be interesting if those are all American humans.
Yeah, I was going to say they did try to show, you know, a little bit of a difference there with Sisko and his father.
American.
Certainly.
I mean, African Americans. They were Americans. But.
Yeah, right. They were Americans, but it was something slightly different than, yeah, crusty white dudes.
Did crusty.
Yeah, no, I'm all.
hey, kids.
Yeah.
Engage.
But that's not what I asked, Philip. I didn't ask you what you thought about the humans. I want to know what you guys think is a good, well-rounded Star Trek race. You know who we haven't talked about? The Cardassians.
Oh.
Yeah, I think they're all pretty evil. Nazis.
Yeah, the thing is, that's the problem with the Cardassians. They have the potential to be... I don't know.
Well, when were they interesting? Social Revolution, when you had Dumar, who everyone hated, and suddenly like, oh, he's a good character now. You're like, really? I remember what he did. I believe he killed Z'all. but we're just going to change his character.
But he did it for loyalty.
Yeah, apparently. For Cardassia? Yeah, and again, I was going to say the counterexample is not Garak. Garak is not a counterexample of Cardassian. He's a interesting aspect of Cardassians. I don't think he's...
Well, and he tries, you know, and essentially what happens at the end is changing Cardassia to be a little bit more like him.
Right. I mean, the Founders are pretty monolithic.
I mean,
even the ships all have saucers. You know, even the ships aren't that diverse.
Well, so there's obviously, there is a push and kind of a hope here that Discovery is going to do things a little bit differently in this arena, that we're going to see some types of characters that we haven't gotten to see before,
right.
Which is exciting and interesting, and we'll see how that goes. All of that, of course, falls and dies on the writing, but... I don't know. I was trying to think of some race that isn't totally consumed by one thing. I came up with kind of the Andorians. I mean, I know we get a lot of their honor kind of stuff as well, but that's mostly just Shran, and I can kind of, maybe it's just we don't get enough. And then the other thing I could see was that came into my head was the Trill Society.
Ah, now Trill is very interesting. Go ahead, Daniel.
I was just going to say, it's obviously they're very, you know, what we get of the Trill Society is very, you know, Trill focused, the symbiote focused, but that's more of a function of, I don't even want to say biology, but we get all sorts of different, I mean, essentially, the goal of the Trill Society is to experience all of these different sorts of characteristics and personalities and experiences. I feel like they're essentially their goal is learning through experience through diversity. So it's, and you know, we get a little bit of their society, their justice system, all of this sorts of things. These questions are answered, and it's not like it's one, any pervasive one. Oh, the Trill are just greedy, or they're angry, or they're sneaky. They're just a normal society that has this extra layer. And then we get to see all these different kinds of things.
I would say outside of the host all being white, and that may not be true, but I'm pretty sure it is. And that's a big but. I agree with you, Daniel. I think the Trill are, because I don't necessarily, we get a lot of them. But, I mean, the potential is there, because when you're dealing with, like, multi-centuries old beings, by virtue of experience of them being men and women and husbands and wives and all the same character, that's a very diverse character. I think the Trill have the potential to be what we're trying to strive for here.
Yeah, we don't get to see too much of it. And the only other thing that popped in my head too were the Beta Zeds. Only because
aren't they all sensual?
Well, I think that's a byproduct of. I don't think they're all sensual. I mean, I wouldn't call Suter sensual.
I was trying to do the Tom Paris. So.
Oh yeah. You know, everything that we learn, and again, this admittedly is very small. It's a race that we don't learn too terribly much about, and most of it through Luoxana, so take it for what it's worth. But, you know, it's just a society that has this layer that humans don't have and other races don't have, but they're not consumed by everything is all-encompassing one thing kind of thing, you know? So it's another society that I just some examples off the top of my head.
Well, okay, here, I got one. Because it's not my favorite example, but I was thinking about it. The Zindi.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I mean, and again, this is where my science and biology and whatever. Like, could you have multiple species come from the same planet? I don't know. But we're just going to say yes and go with it. But anyway, so there's a bunch of Zindi. They're all Zindi, I guess. But they're just so different. Now, of course, they're... monolithic in diversity
inside of their own system. Yeah. But it is an interesting concept. The idea that not one or two, but five different species evolved on the same planet.
Well, six.
Well, we don't talk about the sixth one, but
too soon.
The
too
poor
soon.
Avians. Those poor avians. But it is actually an interesting. Yeah. It is. That's not a bad example. Like you mentioned, obviously within those species, there's not much stretching or going on, but. At least we get to see five different aspects of that culture. So that is a pretty good point. So, yeah. So we talked there for a bit about some stuff, and there were plumbing jokes aplenty. I'm just hoping for, you know, more in Discovery. A little more depth, a little more characterization, maybe a little more reality in the kind of not just one-sided of these alien races. But we'll see how it goes. And, you know, we will watch... Maybe they'll really give Harry Mudd that sad personal backstory.
No.
And I'm poking the bear. I'm kidding everybody. I'm just teasing. Hey, Philip, what are we going to talk about next week?
Well, next week, speaking of monolithic cultures, there's a monolithic culture practice in most of the world, and it's called marriage. And since I will be participating in this rite in about a week and a half, we're going to be talking about Star Trek weddings, not only weddings that take place in Star Trek, but also Star Trek aspects in real life weddings. And so, listeners, if you have been to and or in a wedding that had some sort of Star Trek aspect, please contact us or tweet us, and I'm sure you'll get all that wonderful information at the end here, but we would be more than happy to include any of your thoughts or experiences on our show next week as I get ready to participate in my own monolithic cultural rite practice of wedding.
You're not going to call it that, like, on the actual wedding. Just,
it's going to be on the cake.
Yeah.
Happy monolithic cultural day.
Yeah,
appreciation.
Patriarchy wins.
Wedding day. So, Philip, you know, you kind of forgot the two most important announcements regarding this, right? Listeners,
you're
streaming. You're streaming your wedding live, and the second thing is you're doing a traditional Beta Z wedding. Isn't that correct? Or
yeah, which I think is why you and Darren decided not to come, because you all haven't been to the gym lately.
Man, calling us out like that. No. Anyways, so guys, if people wanted to get in touch with you, Darren, how would they say, Darren, what the heck, man?
What the heck about what? I mean, every point I made is backed up by science in Star Trek.
By science. How come all the Sith are alike? They all dress in black, man. What's going on?
This is a Star Trek podcast. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's not what happened in the beginning.
But geez, you won't let that go, Philip. Okay. Well, if someone wanted to talk to me about all of science fiction, like sci-fi, as it were, they could find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi, or my website, drscifi.com.
And, Philip, if people wanted to apply for your opening for the Mr. Home position at your wedding, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, they can reach me when I'm not taking a moment of visiting the Earth Temple. They can find me on Twitter at NCPublicServant.
And if people want to get a hold of me, they can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number one, as in there is only one thing we care about here, and that is Star Trek.
And yet Star Wars keeps getting mentioned.
Hey, you had a whole segment on Babylon 5. I don't want to hear about it. I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
Stranded here on SETI Alpha 3.